Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time you are listening. This is Ben Gujan with Quad City Art, and welcome back to Talking Art, supported by Quad City Bank and Trust. Today I am childlikely excited to be talking with puppeteer Monica Leo, who is the managing director and lead puppeteer of the Eulenspiegel Puppet Theater Company in West Liberty, Iowa, that works out of the Owl Glass Puppetry Center. Monica.
Yes.
Welcome to Talking Art.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you here. I had known of you through our Arts Dollars granting program for several years, and then recently got a chance to come out and visit the Puppetry Center and meet you and all of your crew and all of
Stephanie,
the characters. Yeah, and what an amazing place. Tell us about the Eulenspiegel and the Puppetry Center and everything you do.
Okay, well, the Eulenspiegel is obviously the name of the puppet troupe, and Owlglass is the name of the building. When we originally got the building in 1995, we'd already been active for 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And so there were people that were surprised that we didn't simply call the building Eulenspiegel Puppet Theater, but my feeling was that we wanted to use the Puppetry Center not just to promote and do our own performances, but also to promote other puppeteers and bring in puppet guests from around the world, which we've done. And so I thought, we need a name that reflects that. And then my sister said, why not call it Owlglass? Because that's the English translation of Eulenspiegel.
Got it.
So that's why that's Owlglass Puppetry Center. And we've brought in puppeteers, I think I counted one time, from 20-some different states and 10 or 11 different countries.
How cool.
And we plan to continue doing that.
So that's incredible. And you said in 95 when you got moved into that building, you had been...
We'd already been a puppet theater for 20 years.
For 20 years. So you have been doing puppetry out of West Liberty, Iowa for over 50 years.
Well, actually not out of West Liberty. Until 95 when we bought the building in West Liberty, we just worked out of our homes.
Okay. But you have been...
But we've been in West Liberty now for... Yeah, we've been Eulenspiegel for a little over 50 years, and we've been in West Liberty for over 30 years now.
That's incredible. And, you know, as someone who is not native to these parts, you know, West Liberty is just a small little dot on the map.
Mm-hmm, it is. And so it's a really interesting little town. There's a lot going on in that town.
Finding a puppetry center with the history that you have was just, it blew my mind.
Oh, yeah?
When I
Good.
Came out. And I was so excited to be able to meet you and hear about your work. Tell us about what Eulenspiegel does, just kind of the general, the big story.
Well, our mission statement says that we produce and perform and high-quality puppet theater and promote puppetry and the arts to the, you know, and educate the public about puppetry and the arts. And that is about it. You know, we create shows, we perform them. We've performed in 31 states and 4 other countries. We're going to add a 32nd state next year because rumor has it that I'm going to Alaska to do a school residency. So
cool.
That really works out.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Well, how did you get started with puppetry?
It was a fluke, an accident. It was totally unplanned. <you know? laughs> I was making my plan. I majored in art. I went to art school in Germany actually for a couple of years and got a degree in art and English and a teaching certificate to go with it. But I didn't really, after having done my practice teaching, I wasn't really excited about the idea of being in a classroom every day. It was actually a teacher that I credit for that, and who was my advising teacher for my practice teaching. And before any of us started practice teaching, he said, I want you all to make a practice of going home after your school day and working on your own work. He said, if you are able to do that when you're practice teaching, you will be able to do that when you're a classroom teacher. If you're not able to, you won't be able to do it when you're a classroom teacher, and I want you to think about that.
Yeah.
And that was really good advice because teaching is a very draining occupation.
Sure.
And after, you know, five classes or whatever a day, it's very difficult to summon the energy to work on your own stuff in the evening.
Right.
And, you know, so I took his advice seriously and I thought, no, I really do want to be a practicing artist.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I don't love kids, I do, and that I don't want to work with kids, but I really want to be a practicing artist. And my mother, who was a freelance sculptor, metal sculptor, told me from the time I was pretty young, if you want to make your living as an artist, you have to find something that you enjoy doing that other people enjoy paying money for. They don't tell you that in art
school.
That is
very
true. That's very unrefined. But I thought, okay, you know, I've always been interested in puppets and dolls. I made, you know, made puppets and did puppet shows when I was a kid. I thought that might be a decent way to make a living. And this was also like in the late 60s and the 70s when the whole art fair thing was just starting to be a craze. And that
sure.
was a perfect timing for me because I started making puppets and dolls and selling them at art fairs.
Yeah.
And I was able to make a living at that for quite a few years. And then, it was in the mid-70s, and it was 1974. I'd gotten into the habit of making these big puppets that were like 4 feet tall and that had hollow heads and movable eyes, and you put your hand in the head and move the eyes with your fingers.
Yeah.
And but nobody wanted to buy them. You know, they were a hard sell. And I had a neighbor at the time who was a mime. And she said, we should do some puppet shows with those puppets since you can't sell them anyway. And I said, I don't know, Deanne. I said, I've never performed before. I'm not a performer. Mm-hmm. She said, well, I am. I'll teach you how. That's how it started.
She and I started doing
puppet shows. And pretty soon people were calling us and asking us, you know, if we would bring the puppet show to somewhere else, you know.
Sure.
And how much did we charge? So then we had to start thinking about that. And that's, you know, was, like I said, it was accidental. It was not planned.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny. Like, I think about how many people, like, and maybe it's now versus that time, but like you plan on, I'm going to school for this thing.
It's really, yeah. I mean, that was a much, you're absolutely right. That was a much looser time.
Yeah. And, you know, and like there are colleges with puppetry programs that people go through.
But, you know, part of the reason it was a looser time was that it was not as expensive to get a degree in those days.
Sure.
I graduated from college with a total debt of $250.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, and that's unheard of. And I had,
I think that's my interest.
Yeah, I had been working, you know, I'd been working like 20 hours a week as a waitress pretty much the whole time I was in school.
Yeah.
And that was enough, that and a summer job was enough to pay, and a little help from my mom was enough to pay my tuition and room and board. And that's unheard of now.
Yeah.
And that's one, to me, that's one of the big failures of our society right now, that we make it so expensive for kids to get a higher education, that, you know, the decision is either I don't get the higher education or I go in debt for the next 30 years. You know, and that's, it doesn't seem right to me. I think it should be way more accessible than that.
Well, and you think about, I mean, I grew up with that promise of like, this is America, you can be anything you want to be, which there's some of that. Like, there's still people that need to do sanitation work build the streets, and there's lots of jobs that have to happen. And in fields like the arts, where there are typically more people who may want to be that than people that a community can support doing that.
Right, yeah.
Like, that's where sometimes they become very competitive fields.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, I always say as a theater director and producer, like, the easiest thing for me to replace is an actor. I can have an actor drop out the day before opening and I can have someone on that stage, no problem. If my scenic designer walks out, that's a little more challenging.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. But
But, you know, I think about kind of you talking about that. I always really believe in that idea of the best ability being availability.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the story of your start as a puppeteer. And it was like, no, we were the people that just, we had the puppets and we did a show and we were just the people there who showed up. And look what it built.
Yeah, that's true.
And I mean, I'm sure when you started, you never expected.
No, I mean, we were doing it for the fun of it.
Yeah. Well, and it, you know, that I think just speaks to how much that passion and that fun and, hey, you're doing it for the right reasons.
Just the other day, I said to Stephanie, I said, do you realize that we are the that we are among the fortunate people who are actually getting paid to have fun?
Yeah. Yeah. It's very cool.
It's our job.
Right. Well, and, you know, you talk about kind of your background coming from visual art. Mm-hmm. And that was one thing that impressed me so much at the center was, you know, obviously there are many different styles of puppets throughout the world. Mm-hmm. Your puppets, and you have a lot of different styles of puppets as well, but they have such a unique visual look. It reminded me a little bit of like Lady Aberlin from Mr. Rogers.
Oh, okay, yeah.
A little bit like that kind of style with the cheeks and there's a, I don't know if roughness is the right word.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, though. They're not slick.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's not a shiny Muppet
No, they're not slick.
So how did that develop as you started creating the dolls and the puppets?
No, you know how it is. I don't think that you really think about your style.
Sure.
I think it's something that just is part of you and it develops. And I've thought about that a lot now that, you know, I'm going to die before Stephanie does, let's face it, you know, unless there's some horrible accident because she's 40-some years younger than I am.
Right.
And I've thought about when she takes over the puppet theater, the style is going to change because her visual style is not the same as mine at all.
You know? Right.
I like her visual style, and I think that's fine.
Yeah.
But it is something you think about. You think, oh, it's going to change. The whole look is going to change.
Right. Right. But that's, you know.
But that's life, you know.
That's life. Life is change.
Yeah.
If nothing else.
And we're all going to die, as Joni Ernst so eloquently told us.
Well, so tell me about the rest of the company, because you've mentioned Stephanie and Christopher.
Yeah, the three people that work there regularly are Chris Eck and Stephanie Vales and me. Mm-hmm. And Stephanie's the other puppeteer. She and I are the two puppeteers. Chris is the outreach director. Mm-hmm. But after we hired him as an outreach director, we discovered that he's also a fine musician, that's actually his first thing.
Yeah.
He teaches guitar and other fretted instruments. So we have been fortunate enough to be able to kind of pull him in occasionally he does a show with Stephanie where he provides the music for the show. It's called Dr. Germington Saves the Day, and it's mm-hmm. about germs. And there's another example of stylistic differences. The last thing in the world I would have ever thought of doing would be making a show about germs. But Stephanie did, and it's a really good show.
That's...
And then the other thing that Chris does frequently is we do a lot of school residencies where we go in and work with kids and mm-hmm. Help them create their own puppets and their own shows.
Yeah.
And Chris will come in, you know, the last couple of days with us and help the kids put music and sound effects to their shows.
That's so fun. Well, and you have an event coming up, the
new
Puppeteer Festival.
We have a new Puppeteers. One of our big things is to make sure that the art of puppetry survives us, you know, that there's always more people coming in and discovering the art and practicing it. And so we this will be our fourth year of doing this new Puppeteers Festival. Mm-hmm. It's not, we started calling it the Young Puppeteers Festival and advertising it as for anybody who's young to the art of puppetry. And then we realized that people interpreted that as children.
Sure.
And children are fine, but we're not limiting it to children. We also want adults to discover the art of puppetry and start practicing it.
Yeah.
And once we changed it from young puppeteers to new puppeteers, I think that message came across. Because this year we have, I think about a third to half of our groups are adults and the others are children groups.
Oh, how cool.
And we have right now, we had a group drop out the other day, so I think we have 13, we have about 13 groups, I think, that are going to be performing.
How cool.
And it's on Saturday, May 2nd, from 10 to 4, roughly, you know, mm-hmm. 10 is the hard start point, but the end point is a little flexible depending on how many groups we end up with and how long their shows are.
Sure.
We bring in an MC that's not part of our company, and we try to always find somebody that's a fine puppeteer in their own right.
Sure.
And the way we organize, we have a critique panel of three people that watch the shows and then give the kids or adults feedback afterwards.
Yeah.
The way we organize the day is that we have three performances each hour.
Okay.
Three 20-minute time slots. Usually 10 to 15 minutes are for the show. Mm-hmm. And then the people doing the show go off to another room with the critique panel and get their feedback.
Oh,
and
how
during
cool.
that time, the MC guest puppeteer does something to entertain the audience.
Oh, cool.
And then when they all come back, then the next group performs.
And can the audience kind of just come and go?
Yeah, right.
The
audience comes and goes. Last year, you know, we've been doing this at the West Liberty Community Center. We set up 100 chairs last year, and virtually every one of them was full.
That's awesome.
Which was really nice.
Very
and our
cool.
guest puppeteer this year is Kurt Hunter from Minneapolis, who's a marionette artist. And he's he's a really good marionette artist. You know, Kurt and I've known Kurt for many years. Kurt and I have very different outlooks on the way we approach the art of puppetry.
Yeah.
My goal has always been to remove as many controls as possible from the puppet.
And sure.
make it so that Terry Jean, my longtime late puppet partner, used to say, I want a puppet that moves itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's always been my mantra. Make it move itself. Build it so that it has enough ambient internal movement that you don't need a lot of controls.
Right.
Where Kurt is the absolute opposite. He makes these multi-string marionettes that have a string for every little thing.
Right.
That are amazingly complex and really beautiful. So, and you know, one of the things, reasons I wanted to ask Kurt is that that's something so different from anything we do.
Right.
And I really don't want the people that come to our shows to define the art of puppetry by what we do.
Right.
I want them to know that there are a lot of different approaches.
Well, and that's the thing. And, you know, I think about, obviously, kind of, I think that everyone's biggest cultural touch point is probably Sesame Street or the Muppets, mm-hmm. which are having
or
a resurgence.
The ones that remember Mr. Rogers. There's the, you know,
yeah.
And we're more along, our puppets are more in the style of Mr. Rogers, most of them, you know.
Yes. And, you know, I feel like there's a little resurgence going on in Muppet and Sesame Street land right now. So I'm sure that's great for business.
There actually has been a resurgence. People so always tell me, oh, well, that's a dying art form. And I think, no, it's really not a dying art form. It's actually a growing and burgeoning art form.
Yeah. And, you know, I would guess when you started in the 70s, that was kind of at the height of, you know, Sesame Street was fairly new then.
There are a lot of puppet troupes that started out in the 70s.
Yeah.
You know? And I think you're right. I think it was the influence of seeing Henson.
Yeah. And I always think about, like, in the theater world, Bread and Puppet Theater.
Right, exactly.
Which, you know, does these massive puppets.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, and I was looking on the website yesterday. You do a giant puppet parade.
Oh, yeah, we do giant puppets. You know, we make them. We started out doing it because when we got our building in West Liberty in 1995, mm-hmm. I thought, what are we going to do because I kept hearing these little rumors of people saying, what are those gals doing in that building anyway? Okay, we're going to show them what we're doing. We're going to build some giant puppets and take them in the summer parade. Because
yeah.
one of the biggest events in West Liberty is the county fair, and the county fair is always preceded by the county fair parade, and everybody
sure.
in town watches the parade.
Yeah.
So we thought, okay. So I called up. I knew the tag teacher at the middle school from other, you know, from previously, and I called her up and I said, do you have some kids that would like to come over and help us make some giant puppets for the parade? And she sent us four kids, and
mm-hmm.
Terry Jean, who was, like I said, my late puppet partner, and I,
yeah.
and these four kids built these four giant puppets.
That's
for
so
the county
cool.
fair parade. And I had never done that before, but, you know, I'd seen them and I knew how to make them. I just had never done it before. So we decided that we would make four puppets that represented different parts of the West Liberty culture.
And like, yeah.
We made a sun to represent the Mexicans.
Mm-hmm.
We made like this sort of fairy tale character, you know, the peasant woman in the woods that might be a witch or might not for the Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
We made a dragon for the Asians, because there's a pretty large Asian population. And then we made an owl to represent Hourglass Puppetry Center.
Sure.
And we walked them in the parade, and they did. They made a huge splash, and people knew who we were all of a sudden.
That's so cool. I love giant puppetry.
Yeah.
Like, there's just something that is so magical about
people,
that.
You know, the interesting thing is people love things that are oversized, and they love miniatures.
Right.
And we, you know, we've got some shows that use miniature marionettes, too. That
oh, cool.
6 inches tall or so.
Sure.
Miniature rod marionettes. And you're right. People love miniatures, and they love
big,
over life-size things, larger than life things.
Well, it's funny. Like, my theater tastes now are, I want a show to be like 70 to 85 minutes, no intermission, or 12 hours long. Anything between there, I'm like, eh. give me the marathon or the sprint.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's so cool what you're doing. And you guys do so many different things. You've got a summer camp coming up that people can sign up for as well.
That's
do you
right.
want to talk about that
yeah,
a little bit?
Yeah, we've got it's for kids 7 through 13, although we're a little flexible on those ages. We had a 6-year-old that was super focused, and we had a 13-year-old that couldn't give it up, you know.
Sure.
And it's basically a week-long day camp.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a couple, you know, the registration is open. It's on our website. You can sign up right on the website, and it's a, you know, it's a 5-day day camp, and they make puppets and put on a show, basically.
Oh, cool. That's fantastic. What else? Tell me anything you haven't told me, and then I've got a couple other questions.
We have gotten into the habit of bookending our season with festivals.
Yeah.
And the spring festival is the one we just talked about. The fall festival we've been doing for a lot longer. This will be either year 28 or 29, I think, of the West Liberty Children's Festival.
Okay.
And it was something that we started shortly after we got the building in West Liberty. And one of our board members, I'm a sucker for festivals.
Yeah.
It seems like I've always been advocating for doing festivals, and we've done others in the past. And at that time, one of our board members said, well, what we really should do if we're going to do a festival is focus on the thing that West Liberty has. And, you know, some thoughts, well, maybe an international festival because there's a lot of ethnicities. And then she said, nope, what we have is children. We have more children than any other small town.
Sure.
Which is true. And it's partly because we have so many immigrant families that tend to have larger families.
Yeah.
And so we thought, okay, we're going to have a children's festival. And we've done that now for 28 years, sort of the centerpiece of the children's festival. We have a really sweet little downtown park that's situated between where a storefront used to be, you know, a store that got torn down. So it's between two stores. And it's just a little downtown park, and it has a little stage in it, and it has bleachers and some tables and chairs. So it's a great place to do performances. And we bring in 5 different puppet shows for that day. So we have puppet shows from 10 to 3 every hour on the hour. And then we have a lot of activities on the street. Everybody in town gets involved in it. You know, all the organizations put up tables. And
yeah.
And we tell them they can promote anything they want on their tables as long as they're also providing an activity for kids that isn't a coloring sheet.
Sure.
Because that's too easy.
Right.
Got to put a little effort into these folks.
Right.
So, and that means that we have a lot of neat activities on the street. You know, we've had things like straw bale mazes and fish ponds we've had some years and, you know, just stuff like that. We had one gentleman who died some years ago, so he's not doing this anymore, but for the first quite a few years, he put up a giant sandbox. That he made out of, he put walls on a 2x4 and put it up on sawhorses and filled it with sand.
Oh, cool.
And then we'd go and bury little toys in it so they'd have to dig for the toys and play with them. And
oh, fun.
So stuff like that all over the street. And then the puppet shows.
That's fantastic.
And then, about 10 years ago, we also started collaborating with Latinos Unidos, which is one of the local Latino organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And we realized that they were also always doing a festival sometime in the fall.
Yeah.
Usually sometime in September, usually either the week before ours or the week afterwards. And we started talking to them and saying, why don't we combine our festivals and do them on the same day and make it a huge blowout day?
Right.
So now from 10 to 3, we have the Children's Festival. And then from 3 to 10, we have Latino bands on the street.
Oh, fun.
You know? And the nice thing is they take care of the food trucks. You know, they provide the food, you know, they or their friends or whoever provides the food trucks. So we have the food trucks all day from 10 to 10.
That's great.
And then, you know, then after we get done with the Children's Festival, people can go out and dance on the street to the bands.
I love it. Is there a date for that this year?
Yeah, it's September, let's see. I'd have to look at a calendar. It's September 12th.
September 12th. Great.
And then some years, we're also members of Puppeteers of America. Mm-hmm. And Puppeteers of America divides the country into 8 regions. We are part of the Great Plains region, which also includes Saskatchewan, Manitoba, North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri, Kansas. We used to have Colorado in our region, but they divorced us and moved to the Southwest region. And every other year, Puppeteers of America has national festivals every other year. And then the years in between, the various regions should have festivals. And they do if they can find somebody that's willing to run one.
Sure.
You know, because it's a big job and it's a volunteer job.
Yeah.
So this year, we've done this 3 times before, and this year we are going to have the regional festival. We call it the Great Plains Puppet Train in honor of the train railroad history of West Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts on a Thursday afternoon, evening. We have a show in the evening. Then Friday, we have workshops and also 3 shows. And then Saturday, Children's Festival takes over and they experience that. Then we have another show in the evening. And then Sunday, we have another show and then we send them home.
So how
that's
fun.
What we'll be doing. We've had the last few times we've done this, we've had about 100 people attend the festival.
How cool. That's so awesome.
The only, you know, we can provide them everything, and it's a great place to do it because, you know, we've got our grocery store does a really nice job catering meals. And for lunches, they have lunch on their own, but there's a number of restaurants in West Liberty. The only thing we don't have is a hotel. So
sure.
They have to go to Muscatine for the overnight
for
lodging.
For the lodging.
Yeah.
Well, you can't have everything, I guess.
I guess not, yeah.
So the one other thing I really wanted to ask you about was because you told me this story when I came and visited, but Eulenspiegel is also a character, correct?
Yes, Till Eulenspiegel was a traveling jester who was born in 1300 and died in 1350 of the plague, and he really did live. He traveled in Central Europe. He was German, although some people think he was Flemish. But
okay.
And in Flanders it's pronounced Eulenspiegel, but you know.
Okay.
Most people think he was German.
Got it.
And then he traveled around Central Europe. There's even a documentation of him going to Avignon when the papacy was there.
Okay.
And playing a trick on the Pope.
Oh, my gosh.
And there are 97 tales that were written down about him by somebody who claimed to be that his father or grandfather had been good friends with Till Eulenspiegel. When you read those tales, some of them just read like typical trickster tales. You know,
sure.
If the hero were the hero could just as easily be a rabbit, you know?
Yeah.
And they're tales that you've read before in different...
Sure.
But then some of them are so unique and particular that that's what makes me believe that he really did that stuff.
Right.
I mean, it's been documented that he's alive and that he lived and you can visit his grave.
Yeah.
But you could still imagine that it was just that all of these stories were imaginary until you start reading them and you realize some of them you haven't read anywhere else in any folk literature. And so you think,
right.
Oh, yeah, he really did that.
Well, and that is so fascinating to me, like this idea of this jester from 700 years ago.
Yeah.
has lived on, and these tales have lived on. And, you know, a lot of times when I think about, obviously the history of theater goes back thousands of years.
Right, yeah.
But kind of going back into that, just the tradition of poking fun of those in power.
Right, yeah.
Or telling those stories, those folk tales, and how they revolve. It's just so fascinating the way we have, as humanity, we pass those things along.
Poking fun at authorities is really important. And he actually, Till Eulenspiegel, his mission was to play tricks on the wealthy and the unscrupulous.
Okay.
For the amusement of the poor and his own amusement.
We have whole industries of that now.
Right, yeah,
you know, I think
yeah.
about things like the Daily Show. Or yeah, exactly. And those are those
and
mouthpieces.
And boy, do they ever have material right now.
They do. Too much sometimes. It's like too much material. Well, thank you so much for coming out today. It's been such a pleasure meeting you and getting to know you. And we're gonna make something happen.
Okay, great. And make sure you come to the New Puppeteers Festival May 2nd from 10 to 4.
Yep, and that's at the West Liberty Community Center?
It's at the West Liberty Center. Community Center, yeah.
Great. Well, we will be there. I'm going to bring my little guy.
Good.
We can't wait, and I hope everyone here does too.
And we have no idea. I mean, we have consulted with all of the groups that are going to be there, or most of them. We've got a few coming up on Saturday.
Yeah.
And I should just say, if you ever want to be part of the New Puppeteers Festival, the way that works, it doesn't cost anything. But you do have to sign a letter of commitment that you're actually going to show up and do it.
Sure.
And in exchange for that, we run the festival and we give you one or two free consultations along the line to help you figure out what you're going to do and how to do it.
Oh, how cool. That's awesome. Very cool. Well, Monica, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, for more information, you can go to www.owlglass.org. Once again, I want to thank our sponsor, Quad City Bank and Trust, and my man on the mix, producer extraordinaire, Mr. Josh Graves. Thank you, Josh. I'm Ben Goujon. This is Talking Art.